Born in 1592 in the Highlands of Scotland, and he is still alive. He is immortal. Constantly facing other immortals in combat to the death, the winner takes his enemy's head, and with it, his power. We know the truth about immortals. In the end, there can be only one. May it be Duncan MacLeod, the Highlander.
Here we are, born to be kings. We're the princes of the universe.
And welcome into Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander Season 4 Recap. And here to talk with you about it, as we are every week, I am Travis, a.k.a. TV's Travis, and that over there is Audie Norman. Audie, how are you?
Doing all right, man. So far, just been a week of the kids home with nothing to do, so we've been lazy.
Yeah, I have this week. I took off of work with the intent of getting ahead on some of my other projects and things around the house and just kind of relaxing and taking some time. Well, the relaxing part happened today because I started a Twitch stream earlier playing some Skyrim, and halfway through, my power went out. So I ended up without power for about probably 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Which
I saw people responding to that. I was like, ugh. Didn't Amy's power go out too randomly? Like,
yeah. Like,
a couple people all over
the place.
It was
weird. And it basically shut down my morning because everything that I wanted to do required the use of something. Like, I couldn't paint anything because I had no light. And I couldn't do it. So I took the dog for a couple of walks and I napped. And I was like, well, that's we're just going to punt on the morning. But it was relaxing. So it did do that. Dude, we finished season 4. We're through.
Yeah, we did.
4 seasons of this show now, which is just incredible to think of when we started. It doesn't feel like it was that long ago we started this.
Yeah.
And we are now 2/3 of the way through the run of the series.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, I want to give a special shout out to my friends Griffin and BJ. They gave us a little shout out on their show, The Best Palcast, last week after we were talking about it being 2 years.
Excellent.
Since we started the show. So,
well, I appreciate
you need
that.
Another podcast to add into your repertoire of shows you're listening to, go check them out.
Absolutely. So season 4, I would say to this point, I think we can agree, strongest season so far.
By far. Yeah.
Very, I would say, even season as well. Like, it's the strength in this season is the fact that it was a lot of ups and not a ton of really bad downs. Like, the bad stuff, and we'll get into it, we'll nitpick it a little bit, was, like, we would just change it, but we wouldn't necessarily just jettison all of it completely. There wasn't terrible episode or anything like that, really.
Yeah. Most of them, it was like, this isn't a bad episode, but we would have handled it differently. And some of that comes from this. You know, it's a syndicated show. They got to fill a bunch of episodes.
Yeah.
And some of it comes from just the time period of when they're making this. Like, there's just a different mindset of shows today. So.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, with maybe one exception, which we'll get into, like, I wouldn't necessarily get rid of any episode. And what's interesting is, and look, IMDb ratings are not the end all be all, but this entire season, there isn't anything that dips below a 7.1, I think, is the lowest rated episode by IMDb users. So it's solid across the board. They get up to an 8, almost a 9 on, I think, the first episode, Homeland. But, like, outside of that, they're all in that 7, upper 7s and low 8s. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
We had special guests all over the place. We had a few surprises, things that I'd forgotten about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just a good ride of 22 episodes that we went through. So I think the first thing we'll do is we will talk about our favorite kind of moments, highs and lows of season 4.
Sure.
A couple of medieval songwriters come up with the idea of chivalry one rainy day.
This isn't about chivalry.
And you embrace it as a lifestyle. You live and die by a code of honor that was trendy when you were a kid.
Would you rather that I had no code of honor at all?
I would rather you survived.
Okay, so highs and lows of season four, sort of our personal kind of favorites, least favorites during the season. I mean, for me, I'll start off with my my highs. Mythos. Mythos getting a lot of character expansion and a lot more just time on screen was really cool for me, as well as Amanda. We got to see more Amanda. There was a mixture of, we got continued maturity out of Richie as well. Like, the character got better. Stan Kirsch was doing better, but he wasn't in as many episodes.
But going back to Amanda, I'd say she had an interesting maturing this season too. That, you know, we saw some of her arc throughout history, but it feels like this season is when she started to make a more empathy turn.
Yeah, absolutely. She became less selfish, less completely like, I'm just going to do everything for myself, and more sort of, you know, just caring about other people, which was great. And I also, I liked the inclusion or the beginning of the Dark Quickening kind of idea being added into the mythos, and this idea of sort of good and evil interplay with the quickenings and the absorption of this power and what that means, I thought was kind of neat. So that was some cool stuff. What were some of your favorite kind of high points of the season overall?
I mean, that was most of them, because, I mean, you know, getting more of Mythos, I think, was the thing I was looking forward to most, because he's one of the characters I definitely remember being around from when I watched it back in the day. So finally getting to see that and get that relationship and just see the way he handled that character throughout the series was great, throughout this season. Yeah, Amanda, Richie, getting Joe back in there and getting some interesting stuff with Joe was, you know, just not the usual, hey, here's your bud, he's going to help you out, bing, bang, boom. But getting, like, some repercussions of what Joe's character has been doing as a watcher, and then seeing what happened, especially towards the end of the series, season.
Yes, consequences. Really interesting. Consequences for the decision that Joe made to not only talk to Duncan in the first place and reveal the Watchers, but then to cultivate and foster a friendship with McCloud. And the some of the fallout of that, some of the consequences of that was kind of interesting in a couple of different ways. We saw it play out more than once.
Yeah.
So I very much like that. Like the stuff that happened between them in the Brothers in Arms episode and how that ended with McCloud saying, like, look, we can't be friends anymore. And that sort of half wrote Joe out for a few episodes. Like, he would show up, but it wasn't buddy-buddy. And it took a few episodes for McCloud to kind of trust him again. And then he all but disappeared for the most of the second half in Paris because of the fallout of the Dark Quickening. So, like, there was that.
My other high, I would say, is the way they used flashbacks this season. I think we talked about it every episode. One, they changed up the formula here and there, which was really interesting. And two, I don't think we had a time where we said the flashbacks were not used well or overused or ran out their time or anything. I think just about every time a flashback was used, we were like, yeah, they pretty much nailed that one as far as how much time it took up, how much it focused on.
I would say overall, yes. There was I liked that they changed up and didn't just like story, 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 flashback. You know, there was an entire episode that was virtually all flashback. The Wrath of Khali was most of it was in flashback. There were episodes with no flashbacks at all. Episodes that began in the flashback. Flashbacks not involving McCloud.
Flashbacks with characters we knew were already dead. But making use of, hey, they're immortal, they were alive back then, let's play with that a little bit.
Absolutely. So yeah, I would go with that. I think flashbacks overall were very strong. There might have been a couple of slips here and there. Like, I seem to remember the conversation over the Wrath of Khali especially being where, like, it was a good flashback, but almost bordered on, like, they needed to do more story in it for the amount of screen time that it had. But, you know, again, nitpicking, right? Like, our complaints on flashbacks were nitpicking. you know, completely. Now, low points, not a whole lot this season. Like I said, this is a very solid season that we both agreed on. I would say the amount of Joe and Richie in the season is a bit of a bummer. It's understandable. I know Stan Kirsch was working on JAG at the time.
Right.
So they wrote him out for the second half. And we talked about, you know, at least if they were going to write him out like that. Now, number one, they have the advantage of, like, Richie is not tied to Duncan. He's his own person. Right. So he can come and go as he pleases. But they also there was never a story reason for him to show up in Paris after Duncan tried to take his head.
Not really.
So it worked. It was able to be done that way. Kind of the same thing with Joe. When they would write him out and he would not show up for a few episodes, we would notice it, obviously. But in terms of the continuity of the show, there was never like a, boy, they needed to have Joe in this one. I think there might have been one time where we're like, well, you know, having Joe here would have been nice to give us somebody. I think, I want to say it was the Double Jeopardy episode, maybe. Or something. There was an episode I remember somewhere where we're like, boy, you know, having Joe be there just to like give information would have been good.
Right. Not to mention the fact that Joe was still his watcher. So it would have made sense for Joe to be close to him for that reason alone. They could have done that if they wanted to, needed to.
You know, every season, because they're 20 something episodes, they're going to have filler episodes. So there was a couple of those, no big deal. I did notice, though, and part of this was narrative because of, like, he left the U.S. and went to Paris, but the whole idea of him teaching at the college kind of died on the vine. It, like, it felt weird because they just sort of all of a sudden, hey, I'm teaching at the college, and then he's just not anymore.
All of a sudden, I'm not.
Yeah, no one cares. It never comes up to, we never get any kind of resolution to that. Like, if they'd had some sort of a scene where, like, he was talking to somebody at the college on the phone about, like, I'm sorry, something came up, I had to leave, I am going to come back, I understand if you don't want to have me back, something like that. But there was just nothing. It was just, like, never talked about again.
Yeah. Thinking about it, they could have, maybe should have had some cleanup thing where Richie does something with the dojo, talks to the college or something.
Yeah.
And he's just like,
could have been anything. Whatever. So. I mean, a lot of highs, not a ton of lows. Overall, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Amanda found out where you were.
What do you mean she found out?
Well, I didn't mean to tell her, Mac, but she started talking and doing things, and, well, I didn't stand a chance.
You wouldn't be the first.
As far as surprises go in this season, I had personally forgotten that Richie just wasn't in the second half of it at all. And again, some of that comes from it being a syndicated show. So most of my watching of it was never like in order of release. It was just whatever came up. So that's that. It was just that number of episodes that had no Richie. And then even in the first half, the number that didn't have Joe was also surprising to me, given that he's in the opening credits, but they wrote him out for a few episodes here and then he comes back and then he's gone. Like, that was, I just remembered them in more episodes this season than they were actually in.
Yeah, for sure.
The biggest surprise for me, and the one that I had completely forgotten, was Charlie.
Yes. Well, and even I talked about it then. I forgot Charlie died, period. In my brain, I conflated Charlie and Richie, and I thought Charlie was going to be an immortal too. Like, in my head, I was waiting for him to get killed and then him show up and get trained by Duncan for whatever reason. And no, he just got killed. I was like, what? What? Okay. And, brain?
And the thing about it is, like, so Charlie gets introduced in season two. He's around for most of the first half of that season as sort of the, not really the replacement, but kind of the replacement for Tessa, right? Because he shows up after Tessa's killed. And we get to know him, and then Duncan leaves for Paris to do the second half of the season, and there's no real legitimate reason for Charlie to be in Paris, so he's just sort of back at the dojo.
Right.
Then we get him back in the first half of season three, and that was part of it that I had forgotten, is like forgetting that the shows were broken into two halves each season means that certain characters just, there's no narrative reason for Charlie to be in Paris.
Right.
So he's just not there. So when he left at the end of at the point in season three where he did, and Duncan just isn't talking to him anymore because he went off to help that lady in the Balkans.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that as like, that's how Charlie left the show. He's off to parts right. unknown. I had forgotten that he came back. And then for him to come back only to get killed off in that episode. Because Charlie was great. And what I loved about Charlie was the interplay with McCloud.
Mm-hmm.
He never took any crap from him. And Duncan kept him in the dark about the immortality and all this stuff. Regardless of what Charlie saw, including, you know, him nearly dying at the end of season two, I think it was, when he gets shot by mm-hmm. Horton.
Yeah.
So you've got all that kind of stuff going on. And then, again, I'm remembering like, oh, yeah, okay, so Charlie just left and he just never finds out. And it takes him coming back and then getting killed by Cord for Duncan to finally tell him who he is as Charlie is dying in his arms. It's like, it's such a heartbreaking moment for that character.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, at the same time, it's also vindicating for him because he finally has confirmation that, yes, there's something weird about McCloud that he always knew.
Right.
So.
And we as an audience are just like, way to go, you big dumb poo-poo head McCloud.
Yeah.
Wait until he dies to tell him. Good job.
Exactly. But yeah, that was, for me, like the biggest surprise of the season was mm-hmm. forgetting completely about that.
Yeah.
Why do you want to go out with me?
Because the alternative is unthinkable.
Special guests, and boy, we had a lot of them this season, obviously.
Yeah, we did.
There was Mythos showing up mm-hmm. in several episodes, Mythos / Adam Pearson, and Peter Wingfield just crushes it in that role. I mean...
Yeah.
He was great in season three in his couple of episodes. We talked about that where he just slipped into it. But season four, mm-hmm. he got to expand.
Yeah.
He got to do more. He got to have more fun with the character. He got to play around a little bit more. We got to see him like take over the bookstore. And he's still Adam Pearson. He's still checking all the Mythos Chronicles, making sure nobody finds him. All that kind of stuff. But it was just... It was such a great character, and it was nice because it gave us a different, like all of the side characters that interact with Duncan are a little bit different and have a little bit different of a relationship with him. Like with Richie, it's a very kind of almost paternal, as well as just kind of older brother type thing between him and Duncan. Duncan sort of takes him under his wing. Him and Joe, it's a friendly thing. But there's always a little bit of tension there.
Just a little bit.
With Mythos, there's a reverence between the two of them. Like, there's a respect. But there's also mm-hmm. Mythos sees something in Duncan that, like, just nobody else does or other people do. But he sees it and wants to foster that and wants to keep Duncan alive. And sort of...
Well, I think because of Mythos's unique perspective of being an immortal... who also snuck into the Watchers.
Yeah.
Like, he's got the eye of the Watchers seeing Duncan's escapades throughout the centuries, but he's also an immortal, and there's a respect he has for the way he's seen Duncan come through time.
Yeah.
That I think is unique only to him because of the perspective he has.
Yeah, and so their relationship is very much like kind of your best friend from high school type of a relationship, where they're just mm-hmm. like, they're tight. But it's also Mythos was not so much the best friend from high school, but like the college friend you had in high school. He's a couple years older and he's a little bit of mystery.
He's the college guy who comes back home and sees how good you've grown up.
And then of course, Elizabeth Grayson as Amanda, and Amanda gets mm-hmm. to expand her role as well. You know, we already know like she's great as Amanda. Just like mm-hmm. Peter Wingfield, Elizabeth Grayson just slipped right into that role and is perfect for it. But like you mentioned earlier, Amanda gets to grow a little bit in this season and become more than just kind of a selfish thief looking out only for herself. We get to see that, no, she cares about other people. There's the episode with Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
Who's another one, Miles Ferguson, coming back and reprising that role of Kenny, which is perfect. Like, if you're going to do that, you got to do that before the kid grows up. So that was nice.
Right.
But there was a great interplay between the two of them in that Amanda had such strong maternal instinctive feelings for Kenny,
mm-hmm.
based on when she had seen him last, and then to see what he had become and watching her what she went through during that was interesting. And we got, you know, there was fun with Amanda, like Double Eagle mm-hmm. was fun, where she's very playful there. There was some more, Methuselah's Stone was a little more serious because it dealt with that stone and Rebecca and all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that was great. And that's not even getting in. Those are the people that were, you know, in multiple episodes. I mentioned Miles Ferguson, but some of the other kind of one-off special guests we had were pretty great. Vernon Dobchev, who I always remember as the snooty butler in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Right.
Popping up as like the mob boss type character.
Yeah.
Was great. Rico Ross. Or no, not mob boss. He was the dictator.
Right. Right.
In the same episode with Rico Ross, who, I mean, Rico Ross is like a great stuntman and perfect sort of physical foil to Duncan.
And right.
He probably put it in his contract, like, I'll be in your episode, but I'm not going to wear a shirt. You're going to have at least one scene me without a shirt. And look, if I looked like Rico Ross, I'd do the same thing.
For real.
I might own a shirt, but I wouldn't wear it very often. Pruitt Taylor Vince as Mikey was awesome. I mean, he's one of my favorite character actors.
Right.
He's one of those guys that I feel like needs to get more work than he already does. And he does a lot, but he's just...
needs to get recognized more for his work and what he does.
Yes. Yes, he's just always so good and so compelling, and you care one way or the other for the character that he's playing. Whether he's playing,
right?
He often plays somebody who is an innocent.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what I've seen him do a lot of. But he's so good.
More often than not.
Yeah, but he's so good at flipping to being sinister as well.
Yeah,
and convincingly so. Like he can get scary looking. So I really like that. Dougray Scott. Was amazing. I remembered that he was in an episode, but I kind of liked how like he was the level of actor they needed for that part. And sort of to play this like broken immortal with amnesia and having no memory of himself and having to piece together what had happened to him. It was like a different take or a different version on the episode from season 2 with the guy from Forever Night.
Right.
The one that had dissociative identity disorder. This was like a different take on that same type of story of immortal that doesn't quite know what's going on and something dark is happening. In this case, it was that that Dougray Scott's character had like snapped and killed his mentee.
Right.
And didn't want to remember that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't have a different personality that took over. He was just like, he couldn't bear the guilt of what he had done.
Yeah, it was kind of closer to PTSD.
Yeah, it was. So I really enjoyed that. And Dougray Scott is another one that I feel like his career, he got better as he aged. Like he aged
even though he didn't look like he aged at all, hardly.
Well, there's that. But like he's put on that perfect amount of age where he's just got a little bit of leatheriness to him now and a little bit of age. And it works. We had Roger Daltrey come back. We got Hugh.
Oh yes.
And that was you had mentioned that, like characters that can show up in flashbacks. It's great.
Because right.
Fitz is dead in current timeline. But it's awesome that they can do that, and they can throw him into a flashback, and we'd love it. We love Fitz as a character. So,
and you know, that's from the conversation that when we covered the episode where he died, we also read that the writers didn't realize he liked being on the show so much, and they were just writing him off. And then he was like, "Man, I want to do more of this."
Mm-hmm.
So this is obviously as a result of that. And like, okay, let's. At some point, they were like, "Okay, how can we fits in here somewhere. Hey, let's do it this." And it worked. And it was great.
Yeah. And they picked a great episode to do it in because it was sort of a bottle episode that was more fun. And it had to do with this immortal couple that get remarried every 100 years that Duncan and him knew. So I love that. Like, That was super fun. Also, I should have put this in the surprises. Peter Wilson.
Yeah.
Showing up out of nowhere in a single episode with a tiny little part, and then that's it.
Mm-hmm. Like, yep.
It wasn't like Peter Wilson being an immortal or being the foil in an episode. She was just a cop in a scene.
Or, what's his name that I surprised you with?
In
Judgment Day.
Yes. What? Oh, crap. I should know this because, again, my sister got a cameo from him.
Uh-huh.
For her birthday. And why
Graham McTavish.
That's the one.
Seeing a young, very young, with hair, Graham McTavish.
Yeah, just like showing up out of nowhere, like, no, you know, not even using a Scottish accent.
Yeah.
None of that. Like, that's crazy. But I love stuff like that. I love seeing these older shows. It was like seeing, was it season one or two where we saw Marion Cotillard? Just showing up at like 19 years old or whatever.
Well, she showed up twice. She was like a random peasant giving birth in one episode, and then she was actually the subject of another episode. I think it was season one.
Yeah. But like just having that out of nowhere, like seeing these actors early on in their careers sometimes, showing up like Peter Wilson. This wasn't super early in Pruitt Taylor Vince's career, but it was earlier. He went on to do a lot more after this. Same with Duke Ray Scott et al. So like, this was a good season for special guests. I don't know if there's any others that really stood out to you, but those were the ones that really stood out to me.
Just a couple, like Lori Holden, who was in, was she in the first episode as Duncan's,
Was she
person he loved, but she was betrothed to his brother or something?
Oh, she was right.
Deborah Campbell. So, yes, who had the bracelet?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That and Scott McNeil as his brother, who is one of the most prolific voice actors out there, is on screen in Highlander for a little bit. So stuff like that. Like there are so many actors that showed up this season that were in there for half a second. And then have this huge other career later on, which we've seen throughout this series, but I feel like this season had a lot of
it. It does feel that way, doesn't it? Like there was a lot more people showing up in these episodes that were like, oh yeah, we've seen them later on. Nicholas Campbell is one from Double Eagle that we talked about on another show we do recently because we saw him in something and it was like, oh yeah, that was the guy from Highlander. We were talking about him on Those Were the Days. I think he showed up in one of the shows that we watched there. And it was like, yeah, that happened. It seemed to happen a lot this season.
Mm-hmm. My flight back to Geneva leaves at 10. She'll never know how close I came.
She'll know how much you love her.
As much as I can for as long as she lives.
All right, we have come to it. We are going to choose and discuss our favorite and least favorite episodes of season 4. I'm going to start with you, Audie. And I want to know your favorite episode of season 4.
Okay, so I juggled around with a few in my head before picking one. I kind of wanted to go with the first episode just because of all the lore of the McLeods and stuff. But I landed on Double Eagle just because that was the most fun episode, not only of the season, I think of Highlander entirely up to this point. And they were just having fun with it. And just, it was almost comical to the point of being a straight up comedy, but they went up to that line just enough where it worked. And it was just so much fun between Duncan and Richie and Amanda and, what's his name?
Kit.
Yeah. Just the constant interactions and almost, it was almost, what am I trying to think of? Vaudevillian comedy at times.
There was, yes, I was going to say there's a little bit of vaudevillian, a little bit of kind of bordering on slapstick, but very much like sitcom comedy of errors, like mistaken identity type stuff going on all the time, right? Like a lot of what's going on over here, what's going on over there. Let's make sure this person doesn't see what this person's doing, you know, Yeah, it's a good episode. We had a lot of fun with it. It's not one of the higher rated ones, but it was fun for all the reasons that you give. And that's what I liked about it was.
Yes, for sure. No,
I guess it was. That one was rated a 7.9 on IMDb. And it's it, that what I like is it's a bottle episode. It doesn't have, you know, you don't have your standard, evil immortal. Duncan's got to fight him.
Right.
He's not fighting for anybody's honor. It's like, and the flashbacks were great with all the stuff that happened and like the, you know, you burned down my casino after I won it, you know, after I won it from you fair and square, where she like swindled him out of the casino. Like all that kind of stuff was great. So,
And just the character of Kit was funny to see because you're like, how is this guy still alive?
Yes. Yeah.
But he must be good at sword fighting because he's been around a while.
He has.
Unlike what's his face we talked about before, where we were like, how is he still alive? Like, seriously, he just runs from everything.
From season 3. Benny.
Benny. Yeah. He was like the opposite of Benny. It's like he could get away with it and probably could handle himself okay.
Yeah, Kit was the version of Benny that we should have gotten, right?
Right.
And I almost would have rather, like, could you imagine if we redid that episode with Benny, but it was Kit, and then we get him later on in the Double Eagle episode? Like,
oh my gosh.
See, that's the kind of stuff that would have been pretty cool, because I think Kit could have fit into that episode really well. You'd have to tweak it a little bit, rework it to fit his character, but I like that. I also, it has one of my favorite, like, just sort of Highlander moments, which is every time Kit feels the buzz, he sneezes.
Yes.
Like it's an allergy. It's the perfect amount of taking the piss out of Highlander.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's funny without punching down. It's just like, you got to think at some point with all the immortals that have been around, somebody's going to react differently. And that's how he reacts. Every time it happens to him, he sneezes.
Right.
And he like...
Yeah, especially when we've gotten a few this season where it's like, where it either is someone's first time and they feel it and it just feels like a headache, or with Benny where he just doesn't know how to react to it at all. So it hurts him because he never can get used to it because he can't understand what's going on.
Oh, Mikey?
Mikey, sorry.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, with Kit just sneezing, that was hilarious.
Well, what was cool was Mikey was kind of the first time we saw like a different reaction to the buzz, really. I mean... You might get it like out of Richie the first time, but then he would get used to it. And so Mikey was that first time where we're like, oh, this is interesting that he doesn't understand it, and he never really can, because it's almost like the first time he's feeling it every single time.
Yeah.
But then
again, it's this season, them playing with the things that we have taken for granted almost up to this point in Highlander. They're like, oh, hey, this can be different. Let's show you.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a great choice. I did the same thing. I toiled with a few different episodes. Homeland was one that I really liked and thought about. Double Eagle was on my list. I really enjoyed Chivalry. I thought that was a great episode. It's got Mythos in it, and it's got some of those great one-liners. When it came down to it, though, I went with Deliverance, which was part two of the mid-season Dark Quickening thing, because...
Yeah.
It was the second half of a very interesting addition to the lore. It was it dealt with the darkness inside of Duncan and the fact that like he's a good person, but this darkness is driving him to do all sorts of things. And like you got Mythos in there who nearly gets his head taken, but is still even though we know and it has been established that Mythos is a survivor and he will do anything to survive.
Right.
He still was putting himself in harm's way to help McCloud, which says a lot about that character, about both characters.
Right.
It was just such a solid, well done episode. And I'm hopeful that they will keep kind of toying with that Dark Quickening more than I remember. Because I really liked, and Something Wicked obviously sets it up, but for me, Deliverance was a little bit better because it was dealing with the fallout of what had happened the week before, or the episode before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I ended up.
That's a good one.
Yeah, for our chat room, we do have a favorite from Ace, the name you hear quite often. Her favorite is Through a Glass Darkly. And that's a great choice.
That was another one I was juggling in my head, for sure.
I thought about that one, too. I love anytime the Rashomon story structure is being used.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's such a great story structure. And again, great performance from Dougray Scott. And so that's a very solid choice there. All right, Audie, your least favorite. What's your least favorite episode of season four?
My least favorite was Reluctant Heroes.
Okay.
So that's the one where Mac and Richie see an attempted hit, assassination, to kill some store clerk, ends up killing his wife, and they figure out it's an immortal, and they don't want to press charges or, you know, be witnesses to it because Mac wants to take the guy out. And it was just like, I think throughout that thing, we were like, would he really feel this way? Like, he just send him to jail and then wait? And then we get the random FBI agent
who's
in on it with him as his secret lover for reasons. And it was just like, ugh. And it just felt like this storyline, like once it took that turn, it was just like, what the heck are we doing?
Yes.
And I think it was sad for me and why I put it as my least favorite, because there are so many great actors in that episode that are just not given much of anything to do well. It was so cheesy and campy.
Yeah, it felt like two different semi-fleshed out ideas that they just had to staple into one story to get something out the door. They didn't have time to flesh out either one. They're like, you know what? Let's take this. Let's mash it with this. Let's go. And neither one worked, unfortunately. And you're right.
Right.
Between Peter Outerbridge as Paul Kinman, the immortal, and then you got Kevin McNulty played Markham, the store clerk. He's great.
Because he's one of those character actors you've seen all over the place, and he just knocks it out of the park, whatever he's doing.
And if they had gone with either story, now personally I would just ditch the whole FBI agent working with him dumb twist because that just was like incredibly forced and felt really stupid. But stick with, you know, the David Markham storyline of like he's in with the mob. He hasn't paid his stuff back. The guy wants to buy a store and he won't do it, so they put out a hit on him and then his wife gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a compelling story, but also I'm with you in that we both agreed it felt so weirdly out of character for Duncan.
Yeah.
To be like, no, I'm going to kill him. Like we've seen Duncan have vendettas before, but never to that extent or feeling that, I don't know, just like out of nowhere type.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I can see that.
Sure. Especially with Richie, the whole episode being like us, like, why aren't we doing this? What's going on?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, it would almost have made more sense if they had switched those two roles and, like, Richie knew the guy somehow, maybe by reputation or something from the streets.
Yeah.
He wanted to kill him, and Duncan's trying to hold him back. That would have made more sense. Because even though,
for sure.
Yeah, like, we've seen Richie maturing, but he's still able to kind of... He's still... falls back occasionally to his old ways because he's still young. So, like, that would have made more sense to me. So, yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I would have.
My least favorite episode, Reluctant Heroes, was on my short list, but it ended up being Double Jeopardy. And Double Jeopardy, for me, is, like, the definition of a filler episode. It wasted what could have been an interesting villain in kind of reprising Xavier St. Cloud without it being Xavier St. Cloud, and brought back the Army CID agent. What's her name? I can't remember now. I'm looking it up.
Because reasons.
Renee Delaney, played by Stacey Travis. And yeah, it was like completely made no sense to have that character there at all. And you know, the character of Morgan Destang, played by Mark Warren, is kind of wasted.
Like
it would have been so much better to have had Duncan worried or thinking that somehow Xavier came back, only for him to find out it's Morgan right at the end.
Mm-hmm.
instead of this kind of cat and mouse thing where Morgan's playing with Delaney and the French police, you know, captain and all that. It was just dumb. And
yeah,
again, we've talked about like Stacey Travis, probably a very nice person. She's a decent actor. That character was terrible from the beginning and just didn't need to be there.
Well, at the end, it was like the worst thing in the world. It was like, I need to throw myself at you to make sure I'm okay getting married to this other guy. Like, no, no.
Yeah.
This is where you're getting into the sitcom tropes that we don't need for this kind of show.
Right. Yeah, that was.
And then she literally throws herself at him and they fall into the river. And I was just like, really? That's how we, okay.
Yeah, and the stuff that works in like Double Eagle, where it's sitcom-y and funny, is done differently than this stuff, which is like forced melodrama. And
yes,
this whole like, oh, I'm getting married to somebody else, but I need to know if there's something there with you. Like, no, you don't. And no, we don't. And let's just move on. Let's not do that. So,
yeah.
And also Ace did put her least favorite, and that was The Blitz. And I can see that. The Blitz is, it's the lowest rated episode of the season. I didn't hate it, but it also just sort of is there.
Yeah, that's
it. Had
that's one of those where it puts Duncan in a weird space that I don't feel like tied to anything really. Like, he's recounting the Blitz just because they're going through this weird earthquake. They never really explained what the heck happened. Like, at the beginning of the episode, I thought it was somebody bombing a train station. They never really tell you what's going on, and it's like,
no, they don't. What? Yeah.
Okay. And it just happens to remind him of the Blitz. And, okay, let's tell the Blitz story because, again, reasons.
Yeah, and the whole reason he's down there is because Dr. Ann Lindsay is trapped down there. Which made sense for her character, kind of, but also she's, like, 9 months pregnant at the time. So, yes, it makes sense for the character, but also it doesn't make any sense for the character. Like, she wouldn't have put herself in that situation, even her.
Yeah, she's smarter than that.
So it's like it was a weird situation for characters to be in, and then half of it spent in the Blitz, which sort of mirrors what's going on, but not really. So it wasn't quite bad enough to be my least favorite, but it was, like I say, it was on that short list. It was in the top three for that least favorite.
Yeah.
So that is our favorite and least favorite episodes of season four. You know what that means?
Yep. Oh, what?
It's time to give out some awards.
Woohoo! Why don't you stay, McCloud?
There are too many questions left unanswered. It's better just to disappear.
Yeah. I guess that's what legends are supposed to do.
That's right. It is time for some awards. We have our awards for this season. Three awards to give out tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start with the Kurgan Award, which is the best villain of the season. All right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got some candidates here. We're going to start with Canwolf from the premiere Homeland. I liked him as a villain because it was the whole idea of going with somebody from sort of a Norse mythology and this Norse background. And like, we got to see something a little different, but then he's posing as an Irish or a Catholic priest.
Right.
And sort of that juxtaposition. Like I liked that. I thought the performance was good.
Yeah.
So he made, I think, a very solid and compelling villain. Another one.
That whole thing of playing with the religious aspect of the Norse religion versus Catholicism and him pushing that and the way they touched on it a little bit but didn't get too heavy with it. Really interesting.
Yeah. Yep. Another is Simon Killian from The Colonel.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked him because he was so focused on hurting McCloud, but not killing him.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to lock him away. He does lock him away. But it was just this singular focus of McCloud hurt me and put me away because McCloud didn't kill him or let the army, the military kill him like he should, like they wanted to and like he had deserved. Duncan felt that it was more of a punishment to put him in an asylum as a crazy person. So that happened, which came back to bite him a little bit. So, Killian was a good villain. We also had from the immortal Chimoli, Damon Case. who,
yeah,
I really liked him as a villain because he was that fanatical villain. Mm-hmm. He's the you know, in this case, a very kind of religious Christian fanatic in his views, yeah, of like, it's a twisted view of, no, immortals are here, mm-hmm, and we have to fight. There is nothing out of, like, this right, razor focus of that.
He's a zealot.
There you go. Zealot. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And I just think that he was an interesting villain. Mm-hmm. And finally, our fourth candidate is the Watchers from, yeah, Judgment Day and 1 Minute to Midnight. Because we've seen the Hunters, the Renegade Watchers that Horton ran, and then, right, we've seen the Watchers be mostly benevolent, but occasionally there's somebody, you know, not doing quite what they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the difference here was this was like organization-wide, the Watchers coming down hard on Joe, mm-hmm, and then on Duncan, to the point where, like, the one Jack Shapiro was ready to start all-out war with the Immortals.
Right.
You know, grieving for his son. So there was, like,
mm-hmm,
he lost a child, so there's that compelling angle to it as well. I really think that they were all just kind of interesting to have the Watchers going in that direction.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Even though they sort of hand-wave it away at the end of the episode with Joe, like, well, I'm back in, so everything's cool now.
Yeah. We'll see about that, Joe.
And the Kurgan Award for the best villain will go to Canwulf. I mean,
yeah,
he was, it was such a great way to kick off the season with this really, yeah, good, sure, villain. And on top of the episode being all in Scotland and back home in, mm-hmm, Glenfinnan, and us learning about some more of Duncan's past,
mm-hmm,
and things that happened to him, and the fact that he had taken on and defeated Canwulf and stopped him before, and that became this legend.
Right.
And then he just happens to be back, and Canwulf, mm-hmm, happens to be there, and like, so that was all really, really cool.
Yeah, and just Canwulf's cunning, mm-hmm, in this episode of being, sticking around and taking over the priest and everything. It was just like, that dude knows what he's doing. Like,
yep,
he is a smart sucker.
I do find it funny that Highlander seems to have a thing for villains with the letter K in their name.
Yeah.
And Canwulf is yet another one. There was Simon, mm-hmm, Killian. There was another, at least one other villain in this season that had a K in his name. Kenny was one.
Yeah.
And he could have been on that list. But yeah, Canwulf. Canwulf is our Kurgan Award winner this season.
Yeah, for sure.
For the Dragon Head Katana Award for the best non-Duncan MacLeod weapon, we have Canwulf's axe. That's it.
And that's it. That's they didn't do anything interesting too much with this. Yeah.
No, this season didn't have a lot of, like, there was no flamberge sword. There was no, there wasn't a lot of varying weapons or anything that was super important to that particular episode.
Mm-hmm.
But that axe was awesome. And that axe was a plot point and was very important to the episode.
Right. You could have said the train for episode 3, The Innocent. But I don't want to because of that episode. You know?
There's an argument to be made for that, to have made the short list, but at the same time, no. Like, it wouldn't have won either way.
Yeah. It wasn't, yeah.
But yeah, like, this was an interesting season weapons-wise in general.
Yeah.
For all the things that they didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
But Canwulf's axe was just, it was so cool, and like, that's the reason he was coming back. He wanted that axe.
Right.
And it was his, and he was going to find it, and just all that kind of stuff. Because
it was touched by Zeus or something, right? Or Odin.
Yes. Yep. So that, Canwulf's axe, is our Dragonhead Katana Award. Canwulf sweeping it so far, getting the Kurgan Award, yeah, and the Dragonhead Katana. And finally, the Christopher Lambert Award for the best guest star of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Up for this award, we have Pruitt Taylor Vince as Mikey. I mean, yep, what more can you say? He's a different character It was mm-hmm. really, I liked the handling of having a character that's on the spectrum like that. And
right.
And, mm-hmm. and again, it's one of those things where it's like with so many immortals out there, you know, that happens, mm-hmm. But when an immortal is born and ends up growing up like that, like Mikey was,
mm-hmm.
it's hard for them to survive for very long because they can't protect right. themselves enough. They might make it mm-hmm. for a while, especially if they can find a good person to stick with, but eventually something's going to happen that they just are not prepared for. And yeah. so the fact that Mikey was going through all that and then to have his moment of, and I don't want to say clarity because it's not like the right way to talk about it, but he had an epiphany that this
an
was
understanding.
Going, yes, that it was going to continue no matter what he did, and that he mm-hmm. didn't want to put Richie through that anymore
yeah.
than he had put through his previous family members mm-hmm. that he had been with. And I just really, really enjoyed that performance and that character.
And especially for the time, it was really deftly handled.
Mm-hmm. We also have up in the running Dougray Scott as Warren Cochran.
Yeah.
We talked about him a lot. He just knocked it out of the park with that character.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a good episode for so many reasons. The different, you know, I mean, we could offer up for the guy that played Bonnie Prince Charlie because he got to play him in so many different ways in that episode.
Right.
He got to mm-hmm. play him as regal and upstanding and just sloppy falling down drunk.
Yeah.
But it was definitely Dougray Scott that carried that episode.
Yeah, especially considering this was earlier in his career, we both were like, good Lord, he is already showing just what kind of actor he's going to be. Like, he yeah. is already punching above his weight.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't feel like he was punching above Highlander's weight at all. Like, he fit in this episode so well.
Absolutely.
Did everything so well.
Mm-hmm. And the winner of the Christopher Lambert Award for the best special guest star of the season, we're not counting Amanda, Elizabeth Grayson, or Peter Wingfield, because they're almost right. like regular cast members.
Mm-hmm.
So the winner is Pruitt Taylor Vince.
Yeah.
This is a coin flip. Honestly, either one, they both yeah. deserve it because they're both so good. I'm just giving the nod to Pruitt because
yeah.
there was something in his performance. There was, again, he's playing this innocent character,
mm-hmm.
but he has a couple of moments in it where you're like legitimately freaked that he might snap and go after somebody.
Yeah.
And you know, like, he's not a small man either. So if he does that and he can't, and he doesn't have full like control of his faculties, what kind of damage could he do? And he got Richie trying to help him and trying to understand mm-hmm. what's going on. And his performance was just so like it was such a heartfelt performance out of Pruitt.
Yeah. Like to pull back the curtain a little bit, you put him in there. I put Dougray Scott in there just because I wanted us to at least give him the nod, but Pruitt Taylor Vince was going to win no matter what.
Yeah.
And just like we talked about with the episode, he had to know or experience someone on the spectrum.
Oh, absolutely.
To be able to handle this performance as well as he did, because this could have been super cheesy, even just a little bit to throw off the entire episode. But every moment he's on camera as this character, he is handling it so well.
Mm-hmm.
And we just love him for it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he definitely is. He draws your attention and he draws kind of he steals your heart in every scene he's in.
Mm-hmm.
He really yeah. does. And it's such a sad ending to it. I mean that moment where he's leaning down onto the train tracks and he knows what's happening, Richie knows what's happening, and he is telling Richie it's okay. It's all right. right. Like he is comforting mm-hmm. Richie in that moment. It's it just breaks my heart every time.
Yeah. Because just before that, did he assault or just straight up kill one of the cops that was coming for him or something?
They say that he killed him because he like ran yeah. his head into the car window or
so
something.
So it's one of those things where the character is innocent and not innocent at the same time. And you're just all the feelings in the world for the way he's handling that. And it's just, again, acted so freaking well.
Yep. Yes. Pruitt Taylor Vince, an actor that doesn't get the recognition he deserves. So we're going to give him a little bit here.
Yep.
And those are our award winners for season 4.
Yeah.
I was married once, you know. Well, I can't think of it. I was married 67. No, 68 times.
You had 68 wives.
Yeah, never one of us, though.
So that's that. That's season 4. Put a little bow on it. Wrap it up in a nice box and put it up on the shelf. That was quite the season.
That was.
A lot of ups, a few downs, but even the downs are like not the worst thing ever. A couple episodes we would scrap. There's 20 of 22 episodes I would rewatch without question.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
You know, it is what it is. Next week we are watching another movie.
Yeah, we are.
Highlander Endgame.
Yeah.
So this is the movie that came out after the series was done and is the movie that melds the series and movie continuities together. Kind of. it will star Adrian Paul and Christopher Lambert. We're going to have stuff to say about it. So,
hell, we are.
You're not going to want to miss this one. That is what is coming up next week. And then we will be rolling into season 5. We'll probably take a short break after the movie before we start season 5. But that is coming up. And season 5 is going to be a fun one. So you're going to want to stick around for that.
Yeah. But if you haven't seen Endgame, though, definitely find it and watch that.
Yes, and cool. And if you can, find what's called the producer's cut. It is a better version of the movie. The theatrical release is a little bit messy.
I can attest to that.
The producer's cut is not what I would call great, but it helps to clean up a good amount of the problems in the theatrical cut, in my opinion. So if you can find that, watch that. That's what's coming up next week. Now, if you enjoy this show and you want to watch us record it live and kind of be in the chat room and see how the sausage gets made, you can do that. We record every Tuesday night at twitch.tv/TVsTravis, 9 p.m. Eastern time. You can come hang out with Audie and I. We love seeing you in the chat. The show comes out on Thursdays at anchor.fm/Let's Watch Highlander. And anywhere that you get your podcast, just look for Audie's amazing art, which, by the way, you had mentioned recently you weren't sure what you were going to do for this this episode's artwork. And
I
did not see that one coming. And it was so, so cool looking.
Yeah, that was an idea. I was like, can I pull this off? And then I played with it. I was like, I guess I can. So,
and what I like is you've got the axe in the first position there next to the katana.
Yeah. Which
we didn't talk about that ahead of time. So that tells you that we're on the same page as far as what we were thinking.
Yeah. The axe was going to be there, but then I went with pretty much just the rest of the swords. There are a few weapons that were used this season that I left out, but it just looks better with all the swords and then the axe.
Absolutely. Yes. And by the way, Amy just put in our chat that it's how the haggis is made, not how the sausage is made. And I hate how much better that is than what I said. So thank you, Amy. That is now going to be incorporated into this. Fantastic. Come on back next week for Highlander Endgame. I'm looking forward to that. I am on Twitter as TV's Travis. You can talk to me about Highlander or pretty much anything. Movies, games, whatever you want. But definitely I'll talk Immortals and Highlander with anybody. So at TV's Travis, and Audie is on Twitter as the Audie Norman.
Yep.
Check us out there. We love to talk to you.
Oh, yeah.
And until next week in Highlander Endgame, remember that there can be only one season 4.
Yep.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.